WKRP. Got kind of tired. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. For more than 30 years, John Kieswetter was the source for information about the local media, keeping audiences informed about the people and projects involved in the entertainment industry through his column and blog for the Cincinnati Inquirer. John left the daily paper last fall, but local media is still his beat. And starting today, he brings his interest, curiosity, contacts, and unique style to Cincinnati Public Radio, 91.7 WVXU and 88.5 WMUB. And you can now find his blog, John Kieswetter Media Beat, on its new home, WVXU.org. And John joins us this afternoon to give us a preview of what readers can expect in his blog and his media reporting. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And John, good to see you, and it's so great to have you working with us here.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Now, you majored in journalism at Ohio University, right?
That's correct.
Along with that other reporting icon, Howard Wilkinson. How did that whole experience at OU, how did that kind of shape you and head you out in your career?
I had two great things happen to me early on. One is that I was there was a writing program at the Middletown Journal where we could that 10 students could fill an open page in the Sunday paper during the school year called The Page. And so I was involved with that, that kind of first sharpened my journalism skills. And then I went to OU, and the last 2 years, the student paper there, The Post, is an independent daily student paper. It's not a laboratory paper. It's not associated with the class. So we'd cover the stories, and we got the immediate feedback. I mean, I was editor the last half of my last year, and one morning I was woken up with a phone call that says, "Hold the line, please. President Soul's on the line."
Uh-oh.
And he wanted to contest a line in one of my stories where a union official had said he had met with the president, and the president said, "No, I didn't meet with him, but I will today." So it was amazing immediate feedback to learn the craft. And then when I come back from OU, I worked as a summer intern in Middletown. So I had 4 summers at the paper in Middletown Journal and 2 years at the OU Post, literally doing anything, covering City Hall, covering academic issues. Duke Ellington came to town, a big Duke Ellington fan, and I got to do a phoner with him in advance and then interview him during back in his dressing room with a few other people between his two sets. And he died of cancer like 2 months later. Mm. So it was, I did a little bit of everything there, and it was a wonderful experience.
Now, there was a media writer at the Dayton Journal-Herald, I think P.J. Bednarski, I think was
his
name.
He was a year ahead of us
at OU.
At OU.
Yeah.
And was the TV critic in Dayton, and then eventually came to the Cincinnati Post. And that was kind of on again, off again, on again, off again. And he finally took the job at the Post. I said, "PJ, what sealed the deal?" And he said, "Well, they said I could use the Scripps Lighthouse on the weekend."
How much influence did he have on you in wanting to go into media reporting?
That was just a little bit of it. Actually, what happened is because of all my experience, I came to the Inquirer as a summer intern for 13 weeks. And parlayed it into about 39 and a half years. But I did my intern, and I had a deal with the city editor that I could stay at the paper and not look for a job. And he kind of thought he could use me because that was the summer of 75, and he thought the Reds might go to the playoffs, which they did. I became they had a job opening. I became a county government reporter, was a reporter for about 2 years. And I was one of the 6 on the suburban team. And the suburban editor took the month of December off. And they said, "Would you run the desk?" So I supervised, 6 reporters, and I had only been there about 2.5 years. And when he came back after Christmas, they elevated me. They liked what I did and elevated me to assistant city editor. So I moved into management real quick. Then was over all of our bureaus in southwestern Ohio. Then they moved me to features, was over our features department. And so we're getting near Labor Day weekend in 85, and Tom Brinkmiller, dear friend, came up and said, he was my TV critic, and he was quitting to go to Disney World to do public relations. And I began thinking, gee, I need a TV critic, and this job sounds like an awful lot of fun. It sounded like more, at that point, the only thing I was writing, per se, was performance reviews, not stories. And so I gave it a lot of thought, and I actually made the request to leave the 11-person management team at the paper and went back to writing, and I didn't regret it for a minute. In fact, other editors from time to time would come back to my desk and said, God, you did the smart thing. We're just stuck in meetings all day. You know, I got into journalism to write, and now I'm just stuck as an editor. So it was, and I would argue that I love baseball as much as Howard Wilkinson, but I always thought I had the best beat on the paper, even including the Reds, covering radio, TV, media, whatever, local, national networks. It was great fun.
And speaking of baseball and the fact that you covered the media, what are your impressions of the broadcast team that we have here in Cincinnati? I watch other broadcast teams around the country. I think ours is pretty darn good.
Oh, I was looking back in old stories and realized back in maybe as early as 1992, I, in a story about Marty and Joe, said that I thought Marty had a Hall of Fame credentials and could get in the Hall of Fame, which happened 8 years later. And no, we've been blessed. Marty and Jeff are fun to listen to. Marty and Jim Kelch. I think that relationship I like because Jim Kelch, after Marty will say something, will say, well, Marty, why do you say that? And kind of draw him out. And yeah, there's kind of Marty and Joe moments about, you know, off topic, but talking about and having a conversation about something. I got to be honest with you. I'm of the old school. When the TV game's on, I turn it down. Probably listen to the radio. Marty and Jeff are with me if I'm in earshot. If I'm out biking in the evening or cut the grass or whatever. So I think we've been they're a very good team. We've been blessed with great baseball announcers in this city going back to Red Barber back in 1934.
Absolutely. What makes Cincinnati such an ideal place to be a media writer? Is it the fact that for a city this size, we have an amazing amount of broadcast history that happened here?
That's a big part of it, because that history of the Crosley Broadcasting technology, Crosley Broadcasting for radio, you know, they were being in the forefront of a lot of technology, for one. Two, like the 500,000-watt transmitter, or playing around with TV before World War II. Then TV came, and all the live shows they did on radio, then they did them on TV. So we had more live shows well into the 60s than other cities. And for a while, it was, you know, in the radio heyday, it was New York, L.A., Chicago, and Cincinnati as being the sources for network programming. So there's all that heritage, and there's been a legacy in this city from the beginning of TV, from the beginning of radio, really, I guess, of covering it in the newspaper, so that the people who you listen to or watch, you want to read about. And there's until last Christmas, a TV column or a radio column in the newspapers, and I just find that it's still true to this day. If a TV weatherman or sports anchor or somebody takes a week of vacation, and they're allowed entitled to a week of vacation, I'll get a question. Well, what happened to Tanya? You know, where did Clyde go? I don't see, the panic that one of their close friends or intimates that deliver the news to them that they count on is not there. And I said, no, they take vacation in March and April because there's May sweeps. You take vacation in June and August because there's July sweeps. And you got to be there in September for the start of the TV season. And so part of what I've always thought my job was is to kind of explain these things to people so not to panic and so they can kind of understand the rhythms of the TV cycles, the broadcasting cycles.
And so we got this personal attachment to our broadcast personalities. Is that unique to Cincinnati?
No, it's everywhere. It's unique to Cincinnati in the sense that smaller cities like Dayton, Lexington, that are nearby, there's a turnover of talent. But here, there's so many people I've talked to plenty of TV consultants and former TV news directors and TV marketing people that, it takes a while to get the viewers' trust and loyalty and to become their friends. And once you've got their friendship, you've got their viewers. And then if you make a mistake or let somebody go or somebody moves on, then you'll turn around the dial and try to find somebody else, because your friend is gone. I mean, that was the whole reason when Nick Clooney was number one here in the early 80s. It was Nick Clooney, Ira Joe, Denny Jansen. And so an agent who was friends with a competing station in town you know, started courting Clooney, Ira Joe, and Jansen to try to get them to a different station. So sometimes they, so Dick Clooney went to KNBC LA, Ira Joe Fisher went, I believe, to New York, and Dennis Jansen jumped from 12 to 9. So there's, you know, that's the way, that's the backroom story to try to break up the relationship that viewers have with the station by making talent changes. They don't make talent changes on the whim. They know that it's going to impact, or it could take 18 months to, for the, so you lose some viewers, or the viewers to cycle in or cycle out. That's why, you know, leaving a Clyde Gray leaving the market, a Kit Andrews leaving the market last year were significant. Now there's a new anchor man at Channel 9, and you know, it's going to take a while for people to get used to Craig McKee, but Clyde was there for, you know, 20, 30 years.
Yeah, speaking of changes on the airwaves, Jim Scott's departure,
retirement.
Yeah.
Wait, no.
Yeah.
That must have happened when I was not writing. No. yeah, exactly. He's somebody, if you think about it, since like 1968, he could have been the voice in your alarm clock, your clock radio, or in the car driving to work. And he was just always somebody there. He was a habit, you know. And he would, you know, continue to work, I guess, till he was like 72, because he enjoyed it so much and loved it so much. But he worked at it, too. I went to lunch with him about 5 years ago in Kenwood. And when we came in, he, like, introduced himself. Hi, Jim Scott. Shook his hands to, like, five or six of the servers and all. And I'm thinking, Jim, they know who you are. But he, that was just his habit. And he didn't take anything for granted that somebody might not know. And it might be a potential. It might be a viewer who would like for him to say hi to. Or it could be a potential viewer that somebody would say, well, Jim Scott, you know, said hi to me and would listen. So he worked hard at it. But that was a big change to, you know, but I haven't seen a ratings breakouts, but I know that the last I looked, the in the overall station, WLW was still number one. The monthlies don't come out for another couple of weeks, and I only see the whole station. And it's also hard to gauge because it's the red season, so WLW always, it's usually number one, but they're always number one in the summer when the Reds are playing.
We're talking with John Keyswetter, and if you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number is 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. John, I noticed something there, and this is something Howard told me about. You like to make notes. You are a perpetual note taker. You're a very organized person. Where does that come from?
I don't know. It's a memory skill. I some people can sit through a lecture at school and remember what the guy is saying, the professor. I always had to take notes that I wanted to go back and refer to in meetings. And even here, I'm jotting down some things. And if the caller will call in and say they're from so-and-so or ask about it, I'll make a note of it just so that I can remember the person's name or whatever. But it served me well. That means
you're meticulous.
Yeah. Well, It's a memory thing that I can remember things. And like Howard, I've always got a
reporter's notebook tucked
but
in your hip pocket.
I don't trust my iPhone. And, you know, if the battery goes or something goes, then that's my day timer. So
do you think as reporters, we're too reliant on technology these days? Is there still room for the old school style of reporting that reporter's notebook in your pocket?
Well, you know, I know people that have a GPS, I was biking through Hamilton a couple of weeks ago, and I was up on the north end by the Joe Nuxhall softball fields, and a lady came by and said, "Where's Joyce Park?" Because it's on a different Joe Nuxhall Boulevard on the south end of Hamilton, and the GPS directed her to the wrong place. So, you know, I'll look at a map if I have to. Somebody sent me a text the other day and said he was surprised that something was happened, but it said I was spruced because he misspelled surprised and it came out spruced and he didn't catch it. So
auto checker, yeah. Auto spot got a hold of
yes.
him. So what's your secret for covering the media and its vast array of personalities? I mean, we're all such reclusive, shy, public publicity-averse types. How do you get anything out of us?
Well, for one thing, if you're in broadcasting, your ego is the size of this room or bigger. No, if you're in broadcast, I actually learned this in college from a police reporter by the name of Dave Gossett, and I said, "How do you get information from the police?" He said, "Well, if everybody sees me talking to everybody, then nobody knows where I'm getting my information." So I just had made it a point that when I'm out and about and I see people from TV stations or radio stations, I can be seen talking to them. And if everybody talks to me, then if somebody slips me some information about channel what or radio station X, nobody knows who told me because they see me talking to everybody. So that was a very valuable lesson early on that's proved valuable. The other one was keep mom happy.
Okay.
So, you know, but for example, there's been various different Cincinnati natives who were in, made it big in Hollywood, movies or TV. And I'm not talking, this is not code to talk about Nick and Nina, Clooney and George. This isn't about them, but others so they send me the tape or the press kit of their son and their son's in this show. You know, I don't need it anymore. I'll mail it on to them and they're happy to have the keepsake. But chances are if that show gets canceled, that mom or dad might say something to me before I'm going to get the word from the West Coast or the networks or that, hey, oh, they shut down production or they ordered a second season or they're making this character a little bit bigger. So like I said, I've always tried to look for the hometown connection. And then, if they still have family members here, I was always in touch with them just because sometimes they're going to hear something from their child faster than I can hear it from after it gets from the studio to the network to the press release to the media release and all that stuff.
Yeah, we were home at one point in Cincinnati to Ruth Lyons, Bob Braun, Paul Dixon, Nick Clooney. So much live local TV, so many live local shows. You think we'll ever see that kind of thing happen again?
I'd say no because they're too expensive to do. You know, the Braun was the last one to go in 84 because, you know, Gary Collins' Hour magazine and syndicated shows like that, the Merv Griffin, was cheaper to just buy it and put it on the air than to have Braun have Cliff Lash and the band and two or three singers and producers and all that, you know, the music librarians and all it took to make the big show. Although, I think, and I've never had the answer to this question, and that is, if you on your computer or your mobile device can just type in something and get, you know, America's Got Talent, or you can get Jimmy Fallon, and you don't need Channel 5, the station with the big stick, to broadcast it to you, then what's on Channel 5? There's news, and then there's a lot of syndicated shows. So, but that, as you know, people have been talking about that probably for 15 years, and it's still not happened. I mean, it's WLWT and Channel 5 is still very important in the transmission process of getting, you know, Jimmy Fallon to us, the viewer. So there was an attempt that Dean Masuccio did with Cincinnati, tried to do a weekly talk show with a little bit, two or three piece band. It was at Newport on the Levee. And they tried to do it weekly and they couldn't support it even, you know, that there wouldn't be enough audience. You couldn't sell enough advertising, you know, couldn't get the viewers to get the advertisers to get the money to make it work. I mean, they taped it at Newport on the Levee. Before that, it was up at Forest Fair Mall or the Mall of Cincinnati or Cincinnati Mills or whatever. They had empty space and he taped that for a couple of weeks and they aired some on Channel 19 to fill a gap at one point, but that was his dream. It never happened. So
the economics of the thing make it pretty much impossible we'll ever see those kind of programs again.
I would think it's a shame, but that's why there's YouTube.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us, and let's talk with Rose in Westchester. Hi, Rose.
John, I was so happy to hear that you're going to be on 91.7.
Yeah,
we
were too.
Good news. Yes, well, I read that in the Inquirer.
Thank you, Rose.
My question is, Bob Herzog on WKRC and that morning news team.
Right.
I just love them, and I wondered what you thought.
Well, did you notice that they made a subtle change in like the past 6 months or so that they have Jen Dalton doing traffic, so they can have Bob as part of kind of the anchor team full time, and
yes,
and they've.
My thought was, I wondered if John Lomax was going to retire.
I was there in May when Letterman retired and was asking him, and he's still having fun and enjoying it, and I think he's going to do it as long as it's fun and he's enjoying it. But yes, I think that move was made because Bob has a big following, and two, that if that day comes, when that day comes, and John wants to retire, that Bob's in place. You know, the other way to look at it is Bob is very talented, very personable. You know, he could be a main anchor or be a morning show anchor in a much bigger market if he wanted to uproot his family, I think. But he loves it here. He grew up here. Actually, he got his law degree here. He was a lawyer before he started hosting movies on Channel 64 and getting onto the TV thing.
Rose, thank you so much for the question. John, what do you think about all the efforts at morning news and the expanded afternoon news hours that we're getting here locally?
Well, it's, you know, if you could expand your mornings, actually from 9 to 11, Fox 19 has been doing very well against the syndicated show. And from 7 to 9 does fairly decent as well. And they've proven that you could get good ratings if you got a decent show and you get decent ratings, and you can make more money out of it than buying the fill-in-the-blank talk show. The evening news has expanded. You know, it's a bigger footprint because it supports the news team you've got, and it also that it gives you more commercial spots if you have more programming. You just have to make sure you've got the audience to support it. And you know, I can see 1 4 o'clock show works. The Channel 9 added the Now. And it's still trying to find its way in terms of ratings, find audience. But the longer it stays on, it'll do. I got to mention one other thing before that we've created a shortcut here. That I'm told that if you go to wvxu.org/TV keys, that you can use that link, put that in your browser, and it'll go right to my blog.
Okay,
John
very
Keys
good.
What our media beat. So it's wvxu.org/TVKIESE, and I had made that request so people could find it easily, and anything I post, I'm going to put it on Facebook, put it on the Facebook page, get it on the Facebook page here at online, and also here at WVXU, and tweet it out. So hopefully we'll tell the world when anything gets posted.
Who's the most interesting person you think you've ever written about?
Well, there's a couple, but the first one that always comes, two people come to mind. One is Steve Allen, who's just a personal favorite of mine because he was like Gary Burbank. He was so creative. He could do, his mind was always
yes.
racing. And, you know, they once asked him, you know, he created The Tonight Show, did The Tonight Show, and then he also was doing a primetime show against Ed Sullivan on Sunday night. And they once asked him, I said, Steve, did they get your show in Boston? He said, oh, well, they watch it, but they don't get it. And the other is Fred Rogers. You know, I didn't really understand Fred Rogers or get Fred Rogers. I was more the Eddie Murphy, Mr. Robinson kind of guy. And then I had my first son, Jay, and I was a big Sesame Street puppets guy, Muppets guy. But he always said he wanted to watch Rogers. And that's when I learned that with all the fast-moving stuff of MTV, of Sesame Street, and the jump cuts and the cartoons and the numbers and all this, here's Mr. Rogers talking slowly and directly right to one person, my son, about issues that would
yes.
concern him or about things. And it really struck me. So we honored him with the TV critics one year, and his PR guy, who's Mr. McFeely, the delivery guy is actually his PR guy, who said, well, we're just in Pittsburgh. Come on over for a day. So Mike Keating and I went over. And it was like spending a day with Mother Teresa. He, you know, here's a guy, huge TV star, no ego at all, absolutely no ego. I said, and the hardest person to interview, I said, Mr. Rogers, now, when you write, do you write on a laptop, type it, or do you write longhand? He goes, I write longhand on a legal pad, but John, how do you write? And he would turn every question around so it wouldn't be about him. Mike wanted to take his picture in his puppet land there in Pittsburgh in QED, and at that point, they insisted that two production assistants who'd been with him like 20 years getting the photo with him.
Great guy too. Really wonderful man. Well, John, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
This was fun. Thank you. Thanks for the invite.
WVXU's John Kiesewetter. I like the sound of that. And starting today, you can get the latest news about the local media scene. John brings his blog, John Kiesewetter Media Beat, to WVXU.org. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our program are available at WVXU.org. Today's program was produced by Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Bruce Ellis. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now next on 91.7 WVXU.